Ghost Stories Online.
When you sign up to be an EPP, extra podcast person to Real Ghost Stories Online, you'll have access to the best ghost stories we've ever told.
The oven doors started slamming open and closed. And in places like this, oven doors take up entire walls.
Never before had I seen such clear evidence of something non-human being in a room with me.
Because it felt like somebody was here. You know, you see, I did it written in paint, where you just painted.
These are stories only EPP members have access to.
I don't know why, but I just wonder if that scream isn't a family member that was there to claim their loved one.
There was like something standing there right in the threshold of the doorway, and I was paralyzed. I couldn't breathe.
It's only $5 a month when you sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com by clicking Become an EPP.
There was an old lady standing at the foot of the bed, and she said she could see details and everything. You know, it just looked like an old lady standing at the foot of the bed.
You'll get access to the best ghost stories and exclusive video content we've ever created.
I have no doubt in my mind that it was completely supernatural.
But it felt like it was in my head. Like, it didn't feel like I was hearing it. It felt like it was in my head.
Become an EPP now and help keep our show on the air. At realghoststoriesonline.com, click Become an EPP.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
And indeed it is, and on today's episode, a couple of friends find their paths cross with a shadow that wears clothing. A voice on the answering machine is undeniably the beloved great-grandmother that passed away years ago. Statues seem to disappear at a battlefield site, but were they statues at all? And it's hard to get the kids to help out on the farm when someone keeps scaring them from the barn. Those stories and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online. Tony and Jenny Brewski joining you once again.
Hello.
And how are you this fine day?
I'm good. How are you?
I am making creepy Halloween commercials.
I know. I've heard you through the wall.
It's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think it was scaring Harper the other day because she was down here and she was playing on the other side of the desk and I had to record some stuff. And she goes, "Daddy, stop talking like that. You're scaring me." And she was kind of had that like laugh on her, you know, that laugh look on her face, though, mm-hmm. of like, I'm telling you this, but please keep doing more of it.
Right.
Because I secretly really enjoy this. And I did it more. Do it again. Do it again. And it's kind of funny. I'll show you a little example of how this works just with the audio file. Because you hear me read it one way.
Uh-huh.
And then I affect the living hell out of it.
Right.
Later. So here's let's see here. How can I pull this up? It's on this computer over here. So I'll play you an example of what it sounds like when it's just me. That's the affected version of me.
13th.
Still the affected version of me. Where's the non-affected version? Here we go. Okay, so here's an example of me just reading it. This is what you hear.
Yeah.
So it sounds like this initially.
The 13th gate is about to claim a fresh batch of souls starting September 20th.
So I don't sound... you know, super creepy. It's a little creepy.
Yeah.
But not like super over the top. And then you go over here and then you add all these effects and everything else in the world to it. And it gets a heck of a lot creepier by doing that. So that here's a little bit of a produced version.
You've never known the true meaning of horror. The intensity and anxiety of true fear. The heart stopping.
It's me.
I know.
A little creepy. Now, if I could actually start talking like that, just at any given time.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be great?
No.
And then I could walk around with like those sound effects on my phone and also hear boom. And then I start. I could really scare a lot of children at stores.
I don't have a reaction to that. I just don't think it'd be good.
See, like one of the children, like it's one of our kids acting, doing something that they shouldn't be doing, and all of a sudden...
You've never known the true meaning of horror. The intensity and anxiety of true fear.
Just peek around the corner.
I'm pretty sure you would be asked to not be a volunteer at preschool.
little Timmy's playing with the wrong toy, and then I pop around the corner with that.
Yeah.
That'd be horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And it would make a great YouTube video as well, all at the same time. Let's go to our first story of the day. Hannah writes in, I found real ghost stories online through Spotify. Been listening to you for a few weeks now. I have several stories that I'd like to share with you, but I'll tell them each on their own. My first story I'd like to tell you is one that 5 years later, I still don't know what happened. In February of 2010, when I was 23, I joined the Navy. In October of that year, I was stationed in I can never say the name of the city.
Norfolk. Yeah.
I screw it up every time. Virginia. I had a few friends who had been stationed there as well, and I met a few more through them. I think my cousin was stationed there for a while.
He was.
Yeah. This story happens after I had been in Virginia for about 4 to 5 months. Had a rare weekend off, and the friend I usually spent time with had duty that weekend. So I ended up spending time with a mutual friend of ours. Ended up driving around Norfolk and ended up in Woodlawn Memorial Garden. I didn't know this at the time until a Reddit user had narrowed it down for me in the comment section. It was dark, somewhat late in the evening. My friend and I were the only ones in the park. We made our way past some rose bushes and off to our left, and in front of us was a pillar of stone with some lights shining on it. I didn't notice anything when we had first walked in, but something made me stop and look to where this pillar was. Sitting on the brick pavers surrounding it was a man. He was wearing a gray hoodie, with the hood pulled up, a pair of faded jeans, and those old-school Reebok-style high tops. The ones with Velcro straps across the ankle. I stood and asked my friend, do you see that? He looked and said yes. Together we walked towards this figure. We stood within a foot of him, and he was standing in a well-lit area and had a lit cigarette. We told this figure hello, and he asked us how we were. I responded, we were fine. The conversation ended. My friend and I turned to walk away, and it was this point I had realized what was so strange. I couldn't see anyone. The best way to describe it is a shadow person, but wearing clothes. I say this because I could not see a face, could not see the whites of his eyes, the flash of teeth. Again, I have to mention he was sitting in a place that was well lit and took a drag off of smoke. Between those two things, and with as close as we were standing, we should have been able to see features. I asked my friend if he had noticed how weird it was, and he saw the same thing. But a minute or two later, after we had settled into a tree, we noticed that the figure was gone. There's nowhere for this guy to have gone in that little amount of time, except for behind the pillar. We did not hear the scraping of shoes on pavement. We did not hear footsteps of someone walking away or even running. He was just gone. A few days later, as I was training for a watch, I told my shipmates this story, and he stops dead in his tracks, and he asked me, what color hoodie was he wearing? I told him gray. I then asked if he had seen the same thing. No, he said, but I did see a picture of him. A friend of mine took it. The figure was walking through it. I asked my shipmate if he had any idea what he was. A seeker or something, I think. To this day, I can't find any information on this figure that I saw and haven't met anyone outside of those two people who have seen this. If you or any of the listeners have any idea what it was I saw, I'd love to hear it. I have a few more stories. The rest are from where I live in Illinois. Love your channel. Love hearing the stories. Keep up the good work, guys. Thanks, Hannah.
I don't know if it's actually a shadow person wearing clothing or if it's just a ghost that you just aren't seeing the features of.
Sure, just not super vibrant or visible.
Right.
So to speak. I don't know. The Nike high tops with the Velcro is a giveaway of someone from the past.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's kids that are wearing that again.
They still make those?
Well, like the 80s stuff has kind of come back.
Yeah.
Like our oldest daughter, even though she's 9, she has a pair of those right now.
She does? And it does the Velcro on there?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, and they're like, they've got the bright turquoise and hot pink on them.
Okay.
I mean, they look like something I would have worn when I was her age.
Sure.
But there's that stuff kind of making a resurgence, but it also does allude to maybe it being somebody from the past.
Yeah, it's interesting. Did it have the pump on it? That's the question. Remember the pump?
Sure.
Pump you up?
Mm-hmm.
You pump it? Have those come back? Are there pump shoes where it has a little basketball that you press and that tightens the shoe?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen those.
Okay.
I don't think anybody would know what those are.
I know they sell them on turkeys.
Okay, but right.
Remember the pump you up SNL turkey bit?
No.
It was like the same time the shoes came out. It was pump up the turkey. And then there was a bunch of basketball players and they pumped the turkey up and it got really big. And
okay.
Happy Thanksgiving. It's interesting when you see something like that, mm-hmm. where it could be an older period of time. What I find interesting about some of these retro ghosts that we have on, people talk about on the show, is that I think for so long when we thought, you know, oh, they look like they're from a different place or time, you're thinking, you know, way back.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're starting to get into, oh, it looks like the 70s, looks like the 80s. Some even we've had like, oh, look like the 90s.
Yeah.
It's like, wow. Old enough to be a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of just interesting to think about. Maria writes, and hello, my name's Maria. I'm from Cleveland, Tennessee, a little city outside of Chattanooga. A little background about me. I was the oldest of three children. My middle brother died when he was 6 months old, and my younger brother has cerebral palsy. I'm not sensitive, but I have been into the paranormal since I was little, since my dad is really into it, too. I'm Mexican, so our culture is really open about this. I have a few stories to share with you. My first story is when I was 8. I had my own room at the time, and my dad would always stay up late and watch TV. One night, I woke up to tell him that I heard knocking outside my window. I could tell by the look on his face that he did believe me. He went outside and saw there was nothing there. This happened constantly, every night, and it got to the point that I would sneak into my parents' room at night and sleep with my little brother. My parents decided to make me share my room with my little brother. Again, he's disabled, but I felt better knowing someone was there with me. My parents never told me if they kept hearing the knocks, but one day, in that same house, something else happened. I was 12 at this time, and it was my little brother's birthday. Now, I'm not sure if what I heard that day was my brother or something else. It was around midnight when I clearly heard three knocks on the door, with a pause between each one. Knock. I woke up. Knock. I sat up and knock. I was looking at the door. I thought about it for a minute and thought of the day it was, his 10th birthday. So I said, "Happy birthday, Danny," and I fell back asleep, still a little shaken up. Now that I think about it, I think I might have been something different just because I listened to your show and three knocks is usually malevolent. Fast forward to now, I'm married, have two kids. We've been spending a lot of time in my sister-in-law's house. She claims her house is haunted. The only incident that I've had with this entity is I've heard knocking outside my window. I saw a shadow in the room I was putting my daughter to sleep in and saw an apparition outside the front door of a man with a hat. I have a ton more stories about it. I'll ask them to share them with me so I can share with you. Now, the house I live in, I think, is haunted, too. It all started with the first night that we stayed here. I had an eerie feeling that someone was watching us sleep. I started having nightmares constantly every night for a month and could tell that my son was having trouble sleeping. I would always wake up at 2 or 3 a.m. and see that my son would be talking to himself or be walking around very anxious. I'd pray and bless him every night, and it seemed to help him. He seemed to be drawn to the closet, the darkest part of the room, and I can always feel someone watching us from that side of the room. My nightmares would be something evil or someone possessed, usually. My daughter would always lock herself in her room. She's 5 and is afraid to be alone, so this was concerning me. One day we were eating in the kitchen and she started telling us of someone she described as the scary ghost clown. She said she would look at her from outside the window and had really long fingernails and his clown makeup was running down his face. She said he was in her room. After that, stranger things kept happening. The piece of ceiling that led to the attic fell down. It is located in my daughter's room. On the back of it, it had the name Landon. One morning, as I was getting ready for work, I looked in my daughter's room and saw her bedside lamp was next to the window. In the afternoon when I got home, my husband told me someone had knocked it over when he got up 2 hours later. No one had been in that room since my daughter and son slept with us. Got a little freaked out. The last thing that happened so far was one day I had gotten in a really bad fight with my husband and he had left. Sat up in bed at 4 a.m. to get ready for work, sat on the side for a minute, then I heard the doorknob of the room next door start to shake as if someone was trying to get out. My kids were sleeping with me and I was the only one there. I just said, "I don't feel like it," and nothing has happened since. I mean, I still get the feeling someone is watching, but haven't heard or seen anything strange. I love your show. I listen to it every day at work. I'm a proud EPP and hope to listen to this story.
It makes you think that runny-faced clown is like climbing in through the window if the lamp's breaking. I mean, that's a thought nobody wants.
The thought of any clown in a house is someone really no one wants. But yeah, I mean, just the imagery that that story has and that little girl had. I mean, you have to think it's probably not the ghost of a clown. It's probably something dark, probably something taking that form because it knows that it will incite fear.
Yeah.
Although that would be very confusing if you are a ghost clown.
That would.
Literally, if you were like a clown in real life and that was your thing, that was what you loved to do, and in death that was how you had no choice, but this is how you are displayed to people as a ghost, and you're always a clown, and everyone just immediately thinks you're it. And really, you were just, you know, Cuddles the clown, and you went to birthday parties and made balloon animals, and you just were a jolly clown. But immediately, everyone assumes the ghost that's somewhat transparent and looks like a clown is going to eat their pets.
You know, that's just the way it goes. I mean, if you're going to be a clown as a ghost, you get what you get.
But what if you don't have a choice? It's just like, oh, shit, I died in my clown suit in a car accident on the way to a birthday party, and now I'm forever a ghost clown, but I'm a good one. I'm really, you throw the ping pong ball over there, I'll give you a prize.
Yeah.
But really, everyone's, they assume the worst. It's a big bias against ghost clowns or ghosts who were once clowns. I think that's probably the correct way of saying it.
Okay.
So no one misinterprets it as like an evil clown.
Yeah, yeah. And we had nothing to do with propagating that. So.
Just want to, I feel bad for those.
Right.
Those ones.
You do.
That are out there.
You do not at all.
Do you ever have a clown on TV, like a local clown on television that, like when you were a kid, that would have like a weekly show?
Not that I remember. I know there was this little hand puppet thing in Wichita. It was called Cake Man.
Sure.
And he wasn't really a clown. He was just like this stupid little puppet.
Like a sock puppet or something.
It was more than a sock puppet. It was kind of like on the old Mr. Rogers, before Daniel Tiger kind of came along.
Sure.
The little people puppets.
Oh, kind of like Lamb Chops.
Kind of like that. Anyway, it was stupid and I never watched it, but I know there was a diehard following of people like my dad's generation that was just, that gave them warm fuzzies was Cake Man.
Everybody has their warm sock puppet that gives them fuzzies.
Yeah.
Or not.
I
remember there was I believe there was two of them in the Green Bay area. Yes, two clown shows.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, like nationally, Chicago had one that ran on WGN, and I forgot who that was, but that was like a pretty... other people will know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Just when I said, like, oh, that's that clown, and I can't think of his name. But there was one was called Cuddles the Clown, and I believe he was on WXGZ Super 32, which was like whatever the UPN or the CW of the day was back in the 80s. Maybe like five people who remember that. And he was like a Saturday morning thing. But I remember as a kid, sometimes he'd do his show like at locations somewhere. And in my town, they had like a little petting zoo. And for some reason, there was something going on downtown. There was a petting zoo and other crap going on. And oh my God, Cuddles came to town to do his show. And then in the audience, there's like risers and kids would sit there. And then he'd, pick out a kid and they go play the ping pong ball game or something and win, a whoopee cushion. And I remember I was about to get to be on the show. I was in line to be one of the kids that got to sit on the riser and get to be uber famous on the UHF channel that no one really watches. And then, there wasn't enough seats. And I didn't get to be on the show or be one of the kids in it. And I had to go, then I'm like, oh, well, let's go pet the donkey over there.
So is that why you
no
have
consolation.
Such bad feelings about clowns?
That's why I hate clowns.
Okay.
Because it didn't let me go on TV when I was six.
Well, we just had a breakthrough today.
They all must die.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it all stems back to. It's not about fear or it. It's about not letting me get my moment.
Okay.
On Super 32. I think you got like a coupon to Hardee's or something as well if you got on TV, but nope, not me. I got to go pet the fucking donkey.
Oh, God.
Thanks, Mom and Dad. Okay, on with the show today. Veronica. Hudson. Hi, I'd like to start by saying thank you for what you do. By the way, my mom hears this, I'll get a text going, that's not what happened. You didn't get to go on because of some other unknown reason that I was unaware of at the time. Like, it was raining or something.
Okay.
We'll find out. I'd like to start by saying thank you for what you do. As a Christian, I often find myself conflicted with what I believe, which is what I've been experiencing. After finding and following your podcast, I've been able to reconcile both. That being said, here's the first of many experiences as a result of my parents' divorce. I moved in with my great-grandmother at the age of 10. I hadn't had much of a relationship with her prior to then. At that point, all I'd known of her were the rumors of other people had told me, things that didn't paint her in a good light. Needless to say, we had nowhere else to go, and she was willing to take us in. I quickly found that those rumors couldn't be any further from the truth. She was a beautiful woman, full of hearts and strengths. At the age of 16, she had moved to the States as a war bride out of Australia, to a new country with a new baby and a new way of life. There was so much I wanted to learn from her. Even at a young age, I was obsessed with history and knowing where I came from. She'd tell me all the details of her life over and over again. She'd always tell me that she was going to live long enough to see me get married and hold my children. Sadly, that never happened. She passed away when I was 13 years old. I felt the normal sadness that comes with that type of thing, but I never felt like she had left me. I always felt like she was with me. It's hard to describe. Yes, we always keep people in our hearts and or their memories with us, but she was truly with me. I could always feel a thickness around me as if someone was sharing my personal space. As time passed, that feeling did too. Never forgot about her, though. She wouldn't let me. At the age of 16, I was in high school on the swim team and working a full-time job. I came home from swim practice, ran into the door. I only had 20 minutes to shower and get off to work. Push play on the answering machine. As I ran past it, I was instantly polarized as I heard her sweet Australian accent, talk through my answering machine. Hi, Ronnie. Just me, Granny Goose. I love you, and I'll see you again soon. I couldn't move. I was breathless and shocked. My mother was at home in her room on the computer when the message was playing. She came out of the room behind me and asked, did you hear that? I couldn't answer. In that moment, I felt her go. All those feelings of pain and loss hit me for the first time. I hadn't felt her again for another 16 years. I've gotten married and had a daughter, divorced, remarried, and had a son, all the while wondering if she knew. Was she there? Had she seen them? Well, I got my answer. My daughter was 9 years old at the time. We've been having some unexplainable experiences in our home, other ghostly actions I'll share at another time. I had taught my daughter that if she was afraid of something or if something of the nature was bothering her, that she had the ability to tell it to stop and to go away. One morning, I was trying to wake her from school and she wouldn't get up, claiming she was too tired and that she had stayed up too late. I asked her, why would you stay up so late by yourself? And she replied, I wasn't by myself. She then began to tell me that my great-grandmother came to see her, and that at first she was afraid because she couldn't understand what she was saying, that she had a strong accent. But after listening for a while, she was able to understand her. And she told her all about Australia, what it was like for her when I lived with her, and countless other details my daughter would have never known. My daughter has never seen a photo of her that had all been lost, but was able to describe her in detail exactly the way she looked and smelled. When she had finished telling me about her and everything they talked about, she said, she told me to tell you she was there when you got married both times and that she holds us all the time. Something my daughter never knew my granny had wanted. Thank you for your time and for reading my story. I have lots more. If you find the time to look up the song Bridal Train by the Waifs, it's about girls like my nanny that became war brides and moved to the U.S.
I don't think there's much to say about the story, just simply because it's so open and shut with the little girl not having any of that knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to describe to a T, even describing, you know, the difficulty of her hearing that accent probably for the first time.
Yeah, I don't think it's one where you can really analyze and go, well, what if it was something evil?
No.
I just don't know.
No. I think part of the answering machine was to kind of let her know that she wasn't going to be around constantly, mm-hmm. but she'd still be around.
I want to know if she went back and tried to replay the message.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think that that would be like an instant, oh my God, and you go back mm-hmm. and it's gone.
But at least her mom heard it too.
Yeah, so you could verify it wasn't just one person and
right.
hallucinating or whatever you want to say.
Right.
Yeah. And I'd love to hear the answer to that. If she was able to replay that message, if it was still there, if it got deleted or mm-hmm. what happened with that. That'd be very interesting to hear. Good story. Thank you for sharing that with us. Kim writes in, hi, Tony and Jenny. My niece, April, who lives in California, is a huge fan of yours and recently introduced me to your show. I've been interested in the paranormal all my life and lived in a haunted house for many years. And that's another story. April read a blog post of mine that I wrote 2 years ago today about an experience I had in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and suggested that I email it to you. This isn't the only blog post I've written regarding ghosts, by the way. If you read this, thank you. Keep up the good work. The 12-year-old boy who asked the question looked at me expectantly. He, his mother, my husband, and I were standing at the bottom of a triangular field in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. We had just met and were making small talk as the shadows grew longer and the air turned cooler on that summer evening. Without hesitation, I looked into his wide blue eyes and answered, "Of course." "Whoa," his mother exclaimed. "I never heard of a grown-up admit to believing in ghosts." "Really? I know more adults who believe ghosts than those who don't believe in them." She seemed to be a member of the latter group, thinking that ghosts were for kids, much like Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy. Or maybe she just didn't want to spook her son, who obviously believed in ghosts and had suddenly become my best friend. My love for Gettysburg started when I was 10 years old, the age I was when we moved to Pennsylvania. My dad, a huge history buff, loved to visit the charming town of Gettysburg, just a mere 45-minute drive away. We visited Gettysburg in all seasons, and it was the number one spot we shared with our out-of-state relatives. The ghosts of Gettysburg weren't a blip on my radar screen back then. I just enjoyed the family outings, beautiful countryside, and Dad's narrated history lessons on the different kinds of skirmishes that had taken place on the sacred soil. He was especially interested in Devil's Den. I talked about how awful it must have been on July 2nd, 1863, for the young Confederate soldiers who sought shelter amongst the rocks to fear and often succumb to ricocheting bullets fired upon them from the Union Army on Little Round Top. My love for Gettysburg and its rich history merged with the ghosts of Gettysburg as I grew older. While working at Harrisburg Hospital one day, a co-worker asked if I'd like to walk to Strawberry Square with her over our lunch hour. She told me Mark Nesbitt would be there for a book signing. I had no idea who Mark Nesbitt was at the time, but I agreed to go with her. Strawberry Square is where I bought my very first Ghosts of Gettysburg book, autographed by Mark himself. I wish I had read the book prior to meeting him because I would have had more to say then. Please make it out to Kim. Yes, thank you. I'm sure I'll enjoy your book. If I met Mark Nesbitt today, I certainly would be able to hold an intelligent conversation with him about my encounters with the paranormal in Gettysburg. Mark Nesbitt wrote several books about ghosts, compilations of stories that came from tourists, park rangers, and residents. The ghost stories in his books are entwined with facts and history of the battle, which is a constant reminder that the ghosts were once living and breathing human beings. It also lends an eerie foreshadowing to the ghost stories and offers an explanation as to why the area is so paranormally active. Triangular Field also saw its share of bloodshed on the second day in July. The reason my husband and I visited the field is because we had just left Devil's Den and wanted to see if the information in Mark Nesbitt's book was correct about this odd-shaped field. Nesbitt wrote that cameras will often malfunction in this field. It was while we were snapping photos of the surrounding woods that the boy and his mother approached us. Though she had earlier admonished me for believing in ghosts, she did admit that she felt a certain kind of heaviness as we stood there. We didn't capture any strange pictures in the field that evening, nor did our camera malfunction, but we did find something strange after we left the field. Passed Devil's Den and started to walk up to Warren's Avenue towards Little Round Top. By then, darkness had settled, though it wasn't completely dark yet. As we strolled, I looked at the field to our left and saw a statue of two soldiers. One looked as if he were wounded and was leaning heavily on the more upright soldier. A couple of minutes later, we decided to turn around and head back to Devil's Den, where our car was parked. As we neared the bottom of the hill close to where I had seen the statue of the two soldiers, a car advanced along Crawford Avenue. As it turned the corner, its headlights illuminated the field. Just as I was getting ready to say something, my husband beat me to it. "Hey, what happened to the statue of those two soldiers?" They were gone. The next morning, we headed back to that same field, and there was nothing there but grass, wildflowers, and buzzing insects. To this day, we've never seen the statue again, but we will go back and check every time.
I would have gone back and asked somebody that worked there if they had a statue or not.
Should there be statues there? Are they down for restoration?
Well, it's kind of hard to move a statue, you know?
Yeah.
So the odds of it having been there and then they moved it.
Yeah, at that moment in time.
Probably pretty slim.
Yeah, I would have to guess they probably did in fact see a ghost standing there. So congratulations. You got to see a ghost. I guess if you had to decide, okay, if I really want to go see a ghost, where am I going to have the best odds of doing it? That'd certainly be one of the best places in the U.S. for going and attempting to see something.
Sure.
Just by the sheer amount of stories. So, yeah, good one. Thank you for sharing that experience with us. Let us know if you ever find out that it was just a statue and it's all bunk. But I'm guessing you probably did, in fact, see a ghost there. Hey, if you like the show, become an EPP. Sign up on the website, ghostpodcast.com. Lots of folks are doing that. $5 a month is all we ask. Get all the bonus episodes, more than 100 of them. And I know in some of the EPP bonus episodes, there's several good Gettysburg stories in them. So if you want some more of that, check out some of those EPP episodes at ghostpodcast.com. Ron writes, and hello, Tony and Jenny. It's Ron again from EPP 90. I felt like sharing yet another story from my childhood home. Do you recall off the top of your head what his story was in EPP 90?
Sorry, Ron, I don't.
If we looked back, we could.
Yes.
We would know. But
it's just getting harder for me to know off the top of my head.
You can guarantee it's a good story, though, if it was on the EPP episode.
That's right.
So there you go. This time it's about the old barn on the farm in the thumb of Michigan. Lucky for you guys, it's not as long as the last one. You know, I do recall him mentioning he has a story about his barn. That's all I remember. If I read the story or listened to that episode again, it would all come back. But I do remember him mentioning something about the barn in that episode.
Okay.
So here we go. Okay. The barn in question is an old red gambrel style, which is was kitty corner from the old house. It has a smaller addition to the east side where we milked cattle and the basement section where we herded the cattle during milking. The foundation is made from the same old rock, mortar, and brick that the basement of the old house is, so it's really old as well. Safe to say that with its construction, it was at least built in the late 1800s or early 1900s. The barn's about 80 feet by 50 feet and from the floor to the tip of the gable about 35 feet tall. Main floor of the barn is elevated, and you had to take a barn grade to get into. If you're unsure what I mean by that, a barn grade is simply a long concrete ramp that leads to the entrance. The main floor was entirely open, except we had hay and straw bales stacked up there. Up here, we call it a haymow. It was also separated into three partitions by main support beams. The entrance and barn grade were to the south of the barn, facing the road and the old house. The yard light, which was at the base of the barn grade, was the only light that shone into the barn at night. This is due to my father disconnecting the wiring from the main floor because the old cloth-style wiring was in very bad shape. We kept dry hay and straw up there, so stray sparks would make the old wood structure burn faster than a gas-soaked rag. We kept the hay on the east side portion due to it being the strongest section of the barn. The center partition was normally empty. It was also where the entrance was. We did keep baby calves up there when we had no room for them in the pole barn. This is where my story begins. It was in the fall of the year, I'd say 2008, about 8:30 at night. This is shortly after we took off the third cutting of hay, and The east partition was full of hay to the rafters, which were approximately 18 feet above the floor. The hay was also stacked so that the whole partition was full across to the beams that marked the partition. There was no actual way to get on top of the hay without a ladder, nor was there a way to see above it due to the lack of light in the building. The yard light only cast a beam of light as wide as the doorway onto the area where I was standing. I often had to care for the baby calves and young cattle, as was my chore. The pole barn was full, so I had to pull a calf in the center partition of the old barn. After finishing with the other calves, I got some milk and headed for the haymow. As I went about feeding the little two-week-old calf, I felt perfectly safe and calm. For a moment, anyway. I'd just taken the empty pail away from the calf when I heard what sounded like a whimper coming from the top of the hay further back. I stopped my movement for a moment to listen closer. I heard nothing, so went back to feeding the little guy, poured some grain into his pail, and started to hand-feed him and pet him up. Then I heard it again. It sounded louder this time, and it certainly sounded feminine. I froze for a moment, letting the current events sink in. I was alone up there, save for a little white and black Holstein steer in front of me. Who was up there, and how did they get there? These questions were swarming my mind, but what I found more pressing was if this person was okay. I stood up straight and said, "Hello, are you all right?" The whimper stopped. I asked again, "Ma'am, hello?" At this point, goosebumps stood up on my arms, and I heard crying at this time. "Hello," I asked once more in a shaking voice. The crying got louder and closer to the edge of the hay. "Are you okay?" I said once more, with far less confidence. The crying then returned into full-on screaming sobs and wails right up to the edge above me. It sounded like whatever it was right above me, ready to pounce down upon me. Knowing now that whatever was up there wasn't human, I screamed, dropped the pail I was holding, and ran faster than I ever had before down the barn grade and around into the milking section of the barn. I didn't stop until I got into the milking parlor where my mother was, just finishing up the cows. She looked at my red face and with concern asked what was wrong. It took me a minute to catch my breath when I asked her if she had been crying, and she said no, and that even if she had been, I wouldn't have been able to hear her. She looked at me and asked, "Did you hear the voices too?" I looked at her stunned, and she said, "Yeah, I heard voices call my name early in the morning and late at night from the holding pen. They also chatter about stuff I can't hear." I knew from that moment that I wouldn't want to venture up there in the dark alone again. But a month after this happened, the other job I had helping my uncle at his repair shop got busy and I couldn't feed calves as often. My parents hired a good friend of mine that I knew since elementary school to help. One night after work, my mom told me about what happened to my friend as she fed the calves up in the haymow. Keep in mind, this guy lifts weights for fun, so he isn't small by any means, nor is he easily frightened. He also never heard my story about what I heard up there in the mow. She told me that as he fed the calves, a woman's voice came out from the hay and screamed at him, "Get out now, you don't belong here." He sprinted to the milking parlor and asked my mom if she was playing a prank on him. She told him no, that she was just milking the cows. I don't believe it to be coincidence that similar things happened to us both. What I do know is that the whole property has an air to it, like this is where you never really feel alone. I have a few stories about the woods, as well as my uncle's repair shop, that I'd like to share next time. I'll continue to be a proud EPP member. I love the show and appreciate the place you give us to share our most frightening moments. Thanks for reading.
I wouldn't be volunteering to help do any chores out in that barn either.
It's interesting that there's so many stories of haunted barns.
I don't know what the deal is with that.
I mean, there's a lot. I mean, if you are, you know, in the farming community and you do spend a lot of time in them,
mm-hmm.
I mean, depending on what you do,
sure.
You know, what you do farm, you know, a lot of folks, you know, spend, you know, lots of hours. I'm just thinking of, you know, growing up in Dairyland, you know, many, many hours. Not me, but I had friends and all that, you know, who'd farm and lots of long hours out there. So I suppose, you know, it probably could be a place of somewhat contemplation and emotions and whatnot. You know, and obviously a lot of living creatures in there as well, if it's like cows or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose you do have a recipe for a lot of stuff going on in there.
Yeah.
And depending on how modern the barn is, you know, actually a lot of electrical equipment too, depending on what exactly it is you're doing.
Well, you know, it makes me wonder with the way barnwood is kind of the rage right now.
Sure.
Like reclaimed barnwood, which I'm all about reusing, repurposing things.
Yeah.
But with as many haunted barn stories as we have, it makes you wonder, is anything attached to that?
Limestone bases?
Yeah.
On a lot of them as well.
Yeah.
Just thinking. So I guess maybe it's not as crazy as I originally kind of just thought. It's like, oh, why barns?
I don't know.
But I don't know. I don't know. I loved wandering around old barns when I was a kid.
You know, I bet back in the day, some people spent more time in the barn than actually in their house.
Probably. You're probably right. So they probably it's just same odds of a house being haunted, especially with some of the older barns. Thanks for sharing that that story with us. All right, next one, Anthony writes in. First, I'd like to say that I love your show. Started listening to it in 2014. The chemistry you guys have is amazing, so much that I put in my profile on a dating site that if they know who Tony and Jenny are, then we are on the right track. Well, there you go. That is really funny. I think you guys, I sent a story to you guys last month about my then-girlfriend and I in encountering a priest who was dead at a small church in Boston. I have another similar story that took place a few months before the first story I sent you. Back in July of 1996, a few friends and I were spending the summer in Tampa, Florida. So it's my birthday, and my friends are running around getting things for my party that night and a few trips to the airport to pick up some friends who were coming in. Anyway, I spent most of the morning fielding birthday calls, and around lunchtime, I started drinking while talking to one of my friends since he couldn't make it. After getting off the phone, I started getting tired and took a nap. Now, this house was part of a new development built on a golf community, and it was only about 2 years old, and we were the only owners. I'm a pretty deep sleeper, but at some point, I felt a light touch on my chest and could hear my name being called and even felt breath on my face with the smell of lemon drops. My mom died right after my 14th birthday, but on my 26th, she woke me up by calling my name in a soft, motherly touch on my chest. Needless to say, I was freaked out, even though I believe that it was my mom, and I know that she would never do anything to hurt me. After that, I was wide awake, but I thanked her for letting me know that she was thinking about me on my birthday. I was so freaked out that I took a towel and sat on a lounge chair by the pool until the guys got back to the house. I like to believe that my mom is still watching out for me even now because I shouldn't be alive. Thanks for the awesome show and giving me an outlet to tell my story. It's okay if you don't read this because it's not really spooky. I was just thinking about my mom and remembered this story. I have another quick one. It's the fall of 97 and I'm back in Boston for the fall semester of college. Newbury Street is Boston's version of New York City's Fifth Avenue because it's where the upscale stores, shops, and cafes are. On the weekends, everyone from all of the colleges goes there to hang out or shop or see or be seen. And back then, street performers would be there. My girlfriend and I are walking down the street on our way to the cafe, but about a block away, I can see this old woman with a folding table, and something just told me she was a fortune teller. So I take my girlfriend's arm and herd her across the street. I'm a little nervous, and she's never seen me like this and doesn't know what to make of it. I'm not drawing attention to us, but as we reach this woman, she gets up from her table, came straight across the street, took my hand, which freaked me out. First thing she said was that my mom loves me and is happy. I'm doing well in school, but I need to drink more water. It really got my attention because my mom would tell me this several times a day. There was no way for this woman to know this. She then goes on to tell me that both my parents are happy and are proud of my sister and me. So I asked her what my mom's name is, and she says Bernice, but everyone calls her Dolores. I wanted to get away from her because she now started telling me about myself. So before she got too far, gave her a few dollars, got my girlfriend out of there. Thanks for listening. Anthony from Westchester County, New York. Anthony, thank you for sharing that story with us. That is very interesting. It's interesting to me because we have, obviously, listeners who have played the part of that other woman who came across the street and gave you that information and heard their side of the story when they're being compelled to share. And we also hear your side of the story being the person who gets that story delivered to them, and to both people still very much a paranormal experience. So thank you for sharing that. And I also really get a kick out of the fact that we are actually on someone's dating profile as far as like the likes and dislikes. If you know who Tony and Jenny are, that's a good thing. That's new. I like that. Thank you for for putting us up there and sharing that. If you like us, keep our show on the air. Become an EPP Extra Podcast person. Sign up on the website, ghostpodcast.com. $5 a month is all it is to be an EPP. You get all 100-plus bonus episodes, brand new ones every single week, and exclusive video content as well. So check that out at ghostpodcast.com. Without your support, we couldn't do this thing. So if you like it, please consider chipping in and helping to support Real Ghost Stories Online and keeping us on the air at ghostpodcast.com. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thank you for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.